This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And who do we have with us?
We have Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boswell, courtesy of our friends at NORAD.
Our NORAD, our friends?
I should say, is NORAD our friend?
We're always your friend, yes, sir.
Especially when they're waving high at you from that F-16 next, right next to you. So you're from the Civilian Education Training Program.
That's right. Yes, sir. Yeah, we come out to air shows around the country and try to help general aviation pilots understand what temporary flight restrictions are, or TFRs. And then if the worst were to happen and for some reason they find themselves intercepted by one of our friends up in the skies, how to hopefully handle that in a healthy and responsible way to a good conclusion.
Well, yes. Don't piss them off.
Yeah, here's my question. These TFRs, they've been in effect since what, 2001? We started this program?
It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when the start date was. You'd have to ask our friends at the FAA for that specific information. But our part of the TFR process is really when they say, hey, we need some help defending this airspace. And typically that's for the president or the Super Bowl or major events like those. We have some asset in there that we need defended and have the ability to respond to, so we will help with those ones. But not all TFRs have us in support of them.
We'd just like to assure you that these missiles locked on you are our normal greeting procedure.
Yeah, really.
And welcome.
Don't worry, they're friendly.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, now, you mentioned that you're not defending all of the TFRs. This would include, you said presidential major events, but not necessarily, say, weather-related disasters like what we had happen down in Texas. There was a no-fly zone established there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so the temporary flight restriction structure is pretty similar around, you know, the United States and Canada. They call them flight restricted areas instead of temporary flight restrictions, but otherwise they are effectively the same thing. And for the purposes of why that airspace exists, it's there to keep people out. And there's a reason that that airspace needs to be free and clear of non-emergency service personnel, whether it's wildfire response and aerial tankers there dropping retardant on the ground, or it's for disaster response for helicopters to be unobstructed or unmolested by general aviation pilots potentially flying through that. That's the whole point of why that airspace is there. For some of the things that are on the ground, like the president or like those major sporting events, we want to make sure that obviously dense population centers or, you know, VIP situations, they have the ability to be defended, because that's not quite the same as a wildfire. And so we will allocate resources accordingly to those sites. And that could be from airplanes sitting on ground alert at a base relatively close to that and able to meet the time response requirements. Or if it's too far away or we just need more immediate response actions, they might be in an airborne patrol overhead with a refueling tanker.
Are you guys involved in handling drone incursions?
Not specifically, no.
They're too small for you guys.
They're not necessarily too small, but again, we just don't know kind of what's going on with those and what they're really trying to do, but also the size of the drone themselves is not necessarily as big as a Cessna. There are some that are, but typically for the folks that are flying those remote controlled ones that you get for Christmas, and those are really small, right? And so we're not really going to have anything to do with those specifically, but we do have ground assets on the or we have assets on the ground that are designed for that close in kind of immediate response that are located near the thing that we are protecting. And so for a TFR, it's a 30-mile ring, and then inside of that is a 10-mile ring. So in between 10 and 30 miles, everybody can go fly through it. You just have a few procedures you need to follow there, right? You got a transponder code that you need to be squawking. You need to be on your approved flight plan and have it actively filed. And then you have two-way radio communication with ATC in that local area to clear you in and whatnot. Some airports are located in that band as well. And if you're taking off, you need to have that two-way radio communication before you take off. Otherwise, inside the 10-mile ring at the center point, nobody's supposed to be going in that one.
Right.
And that's the one where we have the additional assets on the ground that are there to assist and help.
Yeah, we live in southeastern Pennsylvania.
Okay, yeah.
And whenever President Biden came home for the weekend, the TFR extended all the way out over my house and beyond.
Sure.
So it was interesting to see how quiet the sky's got.
Yeah, it does. It does make quite a bit of a difference. And those are the ones that are kind of, we call them standing TFRs. They're not always active, but everybody knows exactly where they're located.
Right.
And for those ones, those are the ones that almost cause more problems because people don't check the NOTAMs. They get used to them. All right. And human nature is, hey, it's just there, and it's, you know, who knows what's going on, but they don't check the NOTAMs. They don't check the weather. They don't do the basic pre-flight planning that we're asking them and why we're here, re-encouraging them from when they're, you know, when back in the day when they're getting their pilot's license, you learned all the basic flight planning stuff. We're asking them to go back to the basics and really re-energize that mentality of, hey, let's check all the basic stuff, and that's going to keep us safe, or the most safe, and provide us the most awareness.
You would think that with technology being what it is, you know, everybody's got a smartphone, iPad or similar device, you would think that this would be easier than ever to do.
Well, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right?
You can't make him play the piano, yeah.
They've got all these tools and assets and resources available to them, but we still see 3 to 4 intercepts, at least initiated, every week. And at $150,000 to $200,000 every single time, you can see how that starts to add up across a year. And that's about where it's plateaued. We've really been successful at bringing that number down, but it's kind of leveled off around 3 to 4. So that's why we keep coming out here, trying to keep reaching out to that next generation of pilots and keep that, you know, mentality of proper flight planning, gaining that situation awareness. And then eventually, and like the cards that I, you know, handed out to you guys, and we have on our website, www.norad.mil/general-aviation. We tried to make it as long as humanly possible so that you guys couldn't remember it all. you can go and download that card as well. And what we tried to do is we tried to take all the ICAO and all the AIM procedures for intercepts and put that on there as well. So you have on one side the flight planning side, and then the other side the response to an intercept side.
Now, do you have a standard package of educational materials that you send to flight schools?
We don't send anything out necessarily. We're kind of a receive only when it comes to that. So we have people come to us and ask for either additional presentations. We've given them at FBOs and flight schools, safety days, that kind of thing around the country virtually. And then depending on where we're located, we might be able to have, you know, come out there in person and provide that. But we go to air shows that are typically general aviation focused. So AOPA events here at Air Venture, we went down to Sun and Fun, and we try to spread it out as much as humanly possible so that we can reach that, you know, big footprint, yeah, as best as able.
Have you had repeat offenders? One pilot that consistently never checks and keeps on busting airspace.
We like to call it a good one-time free air show, right? Yeah. So if you do it once, you know, things happen out there, right? It could be a medical event, could be you lose your radios or go, you know, total electrical failure or something like that. Those are outside of your control. And then there's the human factor of like, hey, there's bad weather. I took a left. I should have taken a right. Something along those lines. And we'll probably give you one as long as it's kind of an innocent mistake. But again, we expect you to learn from your mistakes, and we expect you to do the things that you're supposed to do every single time you go fly. So a second time, I don't think we have too many repeat offenders.
Good.
The lessons are usually learned pretty well.
Yeah, ingrained, burned in, is that the phrase?
Something like that, yes, sir.
I was going to say an F-16 off your wing is quite a YouTube moment.
Oh, I can imagine.
We like to call it a significant emotional event.
Yeah.
To see one of those on your wing is going to be shocking.
Yeah, that's a brown pants moment.
That would be brown pants moment.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, the other thing we like to emphasize, again, safety is paramount through all of these things. And what we don't want you to do is anything that is outside the norm, whether that's operational limits or flight characteristics for the aircraft you're flying. We don't want you to do anything that would be putting yourself and the aircraft that you're flying in a place that you wouldn't normally find yourself. So remain predictable, do all your normal procedures, don't try to go too fast, don't try to go too slow, and just, again, follow the fighter's instructions. The first thing we ask is you switch over to guard. If you see that fighter off your wing, switch to 121.5, and look and try to talk to them. Wave, acknowledge their presence, and start that conversation to help de-escalate the situation. And what we're ultimately gonna try to do is get you pointed to an airport, but first and foremost, we're gonna get you away from the thing we're trying to protect. Okay. So if we can get you away from the thing we're trying to protect, that's the first step to success. The second is, hey, we're gonna get you put on the ground. You might talk to somebody for a little bit. Could be the FBI, could be local law enforcement, could be Secret Service. It just depends on who's physically capable to be there. And then from there, That should hopefully de-escalate the situation. You're going to answer some questions, and depending on how egregious the situation was, you might have a fine or potentially a decertification. But beyond that, hopefully everybody gets to fly again another day.
And I guess the conversation starter line, hey, y'all, you going to Washington too? It's probably not a good one.
Yeah, just usually not good. They're not as sarcastic or as funny in those moments, you know?
No, usually they're pretty down to earth and they're a little upset with
yeah.
you.
Yeah, they're a little straightforward, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, the pilot's probably like, you know, I was watching the game and now I'm up here. You know, really, come on.
That's right. But we, so we're here like we are every year, just providing that education, that outreach to the general aviation pilots. If anybody has any questions, our booth is located in Hangar D in the International Federal Pavilion with us and a few other international agencies that are there to support the folks here, the visitors here at AirVenture. And then we're given presentations that talk about all these procedures. We kind of go through step by step about the pre-flight planning, tools and assets available and resources for that. And then again, the intercept procedures as well that you can see on the card, and we hand those out to everybody also.
If I am intercepted, am I going to be ordered to land at an airport of your choice?
It is not a guarantee that you're going to have to land. Actually, probably about 85 to 90% of the time, we launch aircraft to intercept, and then magically they figure out the right frequency to be on. They talk to air traffic control. They de-escalate the situation. The intercept is terminated. The fighter never gets anywhere close to that target aircraft. And then they go on and do another training mission, and you carry on about your day, and all is right in the world. So majority of the time, if we ever initiate an intercept, again, that was that 3 to 4 times a week, maybe one out of every four, maybe, end up with an airplane next to another airplane. Okay. It's a much more rare occurrence.
So you have a lot of disappointed F-16 pilots yeah. out there. They're going, oh, rats.
I mean, ultimately, no. We don't want to see you guys. We love you guys, but we don't want to see you. But if we have to, we're there. We'll be there, and we'll do the job, you know,
it
professionally.
It has to be stressful for you as a pilot because you just don't know what we're going to do.
That's right. And the whole idea of getting a person with eyeballs right next to another airplane is figuring out what's going on that airplane. Because it could be an innocent mistake. Could be a solo student for the first time out there, has no clue. We just don't know until we get eyeballs out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we never meet on purpose, except here.
Certainly avoiding that.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, yeah. Sir. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've been speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boswell from NORAD. Say it with me. NORAD.
Thank you both so much for having us again. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Have a good day.
This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.